Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series for this Tuesday, February 28th, 2023. I still am Spencer Miller. Last time I checked, that right over there still is my co-host and partner in crime in this little thing we like to refer to as the Isolation Series. And of course, I'm talking about Paul Shields. And Paul, let's dive right in. It has been a few days. I want to get your thoughts first and foremost very quickly on the announcement of the stepping down of the person in charge of Soccer Canada. We know that Soccer Canada has been under a tremendous amount of scrutiny over the last several months, whether it be on the men's side of things or more recently the women's side of things with regards to their lack of funding going into their World Cup year in New Zealand and Australia this July, which led to them wanting to strike a couple of weeks ago and then being forced back on the pitch so that their tournament that they played last week, they were protesting wearing purple and different things like that. All that being said, it has led to the resignation of the person at the top of Soccer Canada. I thought that it took way too long for this to develop personally, but I am excited that it's finally happening, and I hope that they bring in somebody like Atiba Hutchinson or something like that to ultimately take his place.
I think there's so many moving parts, and it's so fresh seeing as how it, you know, just happened but yesterday or the day before. So I can't even begin to speculate who might go in there. I think that they have to find someone who can, you know, be a champion for both the players and the business, right? I think that transparency is going to matter. We have not seen a whole lot of transparency when it comes to Soccer Canada and the players. So I think it's a step in the right direction, but I'm saving my excitement for when something actually happens. It's a big deal, don't get me wrong, but there's still a long way to go to figure out how to fix what feels to me like a very broken and fractured relationship between those who run Soccer Canada and the players who generate all the interest and money, et cetera. So long way to go for me to get excited.
I completely agree with you, though. Like, it is a step in the right direction, one would hope, but I'm not going to get overly excited until something positive really does start to happen. But just to get to this point, it took them way too long, and I'm glad that they finally got here.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think what we can learn from the last couple years of seeing some similar situations where, you know, like Hockey Canada is a good example, things don't move as fast as we might like them to. But I think that it's getting there. We're getting better. It's getting closer. And, you know, now's the time to sort of, now's a good time, excuse me, for Soccer Canada to be reflecting and finding someone who can fix a fractured relationship. So step in the right direction, but yeah, long way to go.
Switching to the National Hockey League, I want to get your thoughts. We know that Connor McDavid is on another planet with regards to being a great, great player. It really took another milestone direction for him last night, if you will, as he got 50 goals on the season in 61 games. It is the first time that a player has done that in that short amount of time since Mario Lemieux did it in 1996 with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So your thoughts on that? Because surprisingly, it is only the first time that he's been able to crack the 50-goal mark in his career. He's had multiple 40-goal-plus seasons, but never a 50-goal season until last night, which, like I said, was surprising to me. He is an assist machine, and he averages over 100 points a season throughout his entire career so far. So what do you make of him getting to that 50-goal mark in 61 games? Like I said, for the first time, a player has done that since 1996.
Well, I think it was just a matter of time. Connor McDavid is the most evolved hockey player we have ever seen. He's the one of the most talented players we've seen, a player that can do everything and anything at an incredible pace. So I think that this was just a matter of time before he started to hone his ability to score goals, right? Early in his career, he didn't have a shot that would beat goalies from outside. He was beating goalies with his speed and with his hands, and he was making incredible passes to teammates and giving opportunities. What we've seen over the last few seasons is him dedicate time to evolving his shot into something that's dangerous from nearly anywhere on the ice. So you take the best player on the planet right now, who's constantly evolving his game. And, you know, this was obviously a goal for him. He obviously put the work in, and you're seeing the results of just what happens when a player who's that good works that hard at something. So I think it was inevitable. It was coming, right? And he's on a different planet this year. He's just playing like out of his mind. So not surprised to see him hit 50. I wouldn't be surprised to see him hit 60 or plus. He's just on a tear like we haven't seen it in many, many years.
Oh, we know that the NHL trade deadline is this Friday, March the 3rd. So we are just a couple of days away. And for the first time in a long time, we've seen a lot of movement happen leading up to the deadline, which is to the detriment of somebody like a James Duffy, who has to be on air for 47 hours on Friday of trade deadline coverage and things like that. But we know that Nito Niederreiter ended up going from Nashville to Winnipeg the other day. We also know that the New Jersey Devils were able to land one of the hottest commodities on the trade bait board for a lot of pundits, and that is Timo Meier from the San Jose Sharks with agent Claude Lemieux, I might add. So what are your thoughts on those big moves? And more close to home, Kyle Dubas pulling off another trade yesterday, bringing in Jake McCabe and Sam, I forget what his last name is, from the Chicago Blackhawks, without having to move on one of your main pieces off your roster yet again.
I just think it's really tidy work by a GM who's obviously believes his team can win, as he should. The Leafs are very good, right? They're fourth best team in the league, and they've basically been there all season. So I think it's a really tidy piece of work to get a top four defenseman and another player that can change the dynamic in your bottom six. We've seen a lot of Sheldon Keefe playing around with that bottom six. So there's, you know, they obviously went out and addressed those needs. You go and you get Ryan O'Reilly to shore up your top six, and Nola Chari to give you some pace and some physicality in your bottom six. And then this is a very similar trade. You go out to get Jake McCabe, who they have under control for another 2 years after this at 50% of his salary. So you get a $4 million player to play in your top four defense for $2 million. And then Sam Lafferty is another bottom six player that, again, helps you change the dynamic, brings a little speed, brings a little sandpaper to what looks like another matchup in the first round with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So to do all that without moving someone off your roster is a big deal. Now, that being said, with Matt Murray coming off the LTIR later this week, or expected to come off, you know, if everything goes the way it is planned, there could be some movement as the Leafs that puts them close to, if not over, the cap. So there are a few expiring contracts that the Leafs may trade out. You know, Engvall is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, as is Kerfoot, as is Justin Hall. So those are the names we're going to hear for the rest of the week in potential trade, as the Leafs may not be done. But again, with a week to go and two games before the actual deadline itself, you never know what's going to happen, right? Players get hurt, things happen. So I think the Leafs have put themselves in a great position to add to a very good team, to add very good players without losing any of their roster players currently.
Do you believe that Patrick Kane ends up as a New York Ranger or somewhere else by the 3 p.m. deadline on Friday? Because we know that his name has been bandied about quite a lot. And we know that he's really shown the old form of Patrick Kane in recent weeks since the trade deadline has approached, so much so that Chicago is protecting him and sitting him until the deadline. So where do you think, if anywhere, he ends up?
I would say that the Rangers have been his target, probably since the start. I think that, you know, both him and Taves are in similar situations. Taves is obviously injured or, you know, dealing with his health and whatnot. So he's not in play at this trade deadline, or we don't believe him to be because of what's going on there. And we want him to get healthy. But you're looking at two guys who I think totally believed they were going to end their career with Chicago. So they, you know, coming to terms with the fact that they were leaving is a process. That's hard for some guys. And I think at the beginning of this process, the Rangers were the team that kept coming up in these conversations, that, you know, it kept being alluded to that is where Patrick Kane wanted to go. Now time has passed and the Blackhawks are exactly as bad as we expected them to be. And now you're looking at trading Patrick Kane and their name is still coming up. So I think where there's smoke, there's fire. And because of, you know, his status as one of the you know, best players in Chicago history, as an elite player in the game, with a player with a no trade clause, he has a lot of power here, right? So I believe that if that is where he wants to go, that's where he's going to end up. You saw the Rangers make a couple smaller deals over the weekend to clear up some cap space. So it looks to me like they are opening room to try and get that trade done. So if Patrick Kane moves, I would expect it to be the Rangers. And if not, man, we've wasted a lot of energy talking about it.
100%. And as I like to say on this program quite a lot, ladies and gentlemen, only time will tell. Switching gears, I would be remiss if we did not talk for a moment about Damian Lillard. We know that Damian Lillard is a tremendous basketball player and has been since coming into the National Basketball Association, but he's sort of sneakily under the radar as far as being a superstar goes because of where he plays in Portland. Yes, he does get his flowers from time to time and different things like that, but for the second time since the calendar turned to 2023 the other day, Dame Lillard dropped 71 points, matching Donovan Mitchell from a month earlier on January 2nd and the Cleveland Cavaliers when he dropped 71. And the interesting thing to me, Paul, about Damian Lillard dropping 71 points, it made him pass Michael Jordan in all-time history for the most 60-plus point games with five. So he is now third all-time on that list, only behind the great Will Chamberlain, which, if you can believe this number is crazy. He had 33 60-plus point games in his career, and Kobe Bryant has had six or had six rather, and now right behind Kobe is Damian Lillard. So your thoughts on Damian Lillard sort of being under the radar based on his where he plays and the market where he plays?
I think Damian Lillard is only, you know, I mean, I'm sure playing in Portland maybe isn't playing in LA, it isn't playing in New York or some of the larger markets in the NBA. But I think anybody that's been watching basketball knows how good Damian Lillard is. And certainly when you hear other players talk about him, they know how good he is. So I don't disagree that he might be a little underseen, particularly on the national level when it comes to the NBA, but this is a player that's been very good for a long time, right? He, you know, if I think back to a couple off seasons ago, the fact that he might move was like groundbreaking storytelling when it came to NBA. If he was going to stay in Portland and continue to try and win there. So I think he's amazing. I think that he continues to be amazing. And the list of things that you just spouted out for everybody should, you know, that all of that is on his resume in, you know, recently, right? So this is a player that's continuing to get better, continuing to be good. And even if he doesn't get the attention of some of the guys that play in the markets I talked about earlier, he is a bona fide superstar. And, you know, you wonder if he'll be able to stay in Portland and try and win there, or if he becomes the head of another two or three headed monster that goes on to win championships. Cause I really think that winning in the playoffs and winning those championships, that might be the only thing holding him sort of out of the public, out of that spotlight as a bona fide, no doubt superstar.
Would you compare him then to Dan Marino in the sense that Dan Marino was a great quarterback for a long, long time, but he could never win a championship with those Dolphins teams? Sure, he made it to a couple of championship games and different things like that, but ultimately he never won a ring. And people sort of talk about that a lot with regards to him, along with Karl Malone and John Stockton and those great Utah Jazz teams that should have won championships if they didn't meet up with a guy named Michael Jeffrey Jordan back in the day, and Byron Russell didn't get a push off, clearly not called for that final shot in the one finals game in game six.
Yeah, Dan Marino was one of the best quarterbacks of all time. I don't know that I'm ready to put Lillard in that category, but I understand the comparison. I'm not quite there, but I understand what you're saying.
Yes. Okay. And then before we wrap up this last day of February edition of the Isolation Series, is there something that we haven't covered that we should cover, my friend? I know it's been a few days. I tried to run down the list as best I could. Have I missed out on anything, my friend?
You know, I think that as we head to Friday, what we're really and the NHL trade deadline, and we touched a little bit from a Maple Leafs perspective on what's happening there, and Patrick Kane, of course, I think what we're seeing is that the East has really become an arms race where, you know, six of the top eight teams in the NHL right now are in the Eastern Conference. So that's going to be a grind. So we're seeing teams sort of maneuvering for position while, you know, other teams are battling for wild card spots, which is really fascinating. But I think that the thing to watch this week is what happens in the West. We saw the big trade where Timo Meier finally made it to New Jersey after weeks of speculation in a multiplayer, multi-pick deal. But I think that the way that the West breaks down is going to be really fascinating, and seeing what the West does over the next couple of days might help to start to separate some of the pack, because I think there's a couple real good teams near the top of the end in the Western Conference, but I don't think that there is a bona fide team that's 100% coming out of the West. So while the East, you know, they load up and it's going to be an absolute grind, I'm curious to see what happens in the West with players like Erik Karlsson, and if the Oilers are able to get a defenseman, if Colorado can continue to roll, because now they're pushing to knock teams out of their playoff spots after a really tough start with injuries. So I would say as we move to the deadline on Friday, keep an eye on that Western Conference. It's going to be fascinating.
I agree, but an announcement happened from the GM of the San Jose Sharks late yesterday, and he made a statement saying that it's a 90% probability now that Erik Karlsson stays put until the offseason. Obviously, things can change when the offers come on the table leading up to the 3 p.m. Eastern deadline, noon Pacific deadline on Friday, like we mentioned, but I don't see Erik Karlsson moving, which is a shame because he's had a really couple renaissance good years for himself in San Jose recently. But only time will tell. And I would be remiss also if I did not mention, I know that some people that listen to this program don't like the fact that we mention WWE and wrestling on this program from time to time. But hey, that's why it's our program and whatever. But yesterday on Monday Night Raw, we saw some history as Becky Lynch teamed up with Hall of Famer Lita, and they became the brand new women's tag team champions. We know that this belt has not been relevant for a while for whatever reason, because of certain things and storylines and different things like that. It was nice to see them get the win and be able to get those belts and have Trish Stratus, who is Lita's best friend and fellow Hall of Famer, come out and celebrate as well. Do you ultimately believe that they will have these belts for a decent amount of time, or do you think that something is going to happen at WrestleMania so that they have another little program coming out facing each other at WrestleMania Backlash or something like that? Because that's what I'm leaning towards myself.
Excuse me. Yeah, I would say that they're probably loading up for something. I can't see them holding those belts too much past WrestleMania. I think that they're building a storyline either to have a six woman tag match with Damage Control, Trish, Lita, and Becky. I know that Rhonda and Shayna are also in the conversation for tag teams, you know, looking for those belts, and that would be a big match, you know, having Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler versus Lita and Becky Lynch. So there's lots they could do. Again, it is a good example of some fun storytelling. You know, in as we are here in WrestleMania season, you've got 4 to 6 weeks to build up something fun and something fresh with some new opponents, and seeing, you know, we've seen a lot of nostalgia acts on the men's side come back and win tag team titles, right? Lots of names come to mind. So I like to see that on the ladies' side, and I think it's really fun. I think it's a good match.
Absolutely. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller. This has been another edition of the Isolation Series for February 28, 2023, which also happens to be a Tuesday. As always, we look forward to coming back at you later on in the week to talk everything sports, entertainment, and pop culture. But until now, take care of yourselves, and we look forward to talking to you again a little bit later on this week. Bye-bye. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @TheSpencerMiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.